If you're enjoying this audiobook, you should know that this week I launched the Kickstarter for book 2 in the series, Salt in the Seas. If you want to be among the first to read it, go to tinyurl.com/saltintheseas to back the project and get your copy. You are listening to the serialized audiobook podcast for Blood of the Stars, an epic fantasy novel written by Corinne Norton, read by Peter Franson and Corinne Norton. If you can't wait to listen to the whole audiobook, or if you want a signed physical copy, go to corinnenorton.com/shop to get the lowest cost by buying direct. You can also find the audiobook on Audible, Barnes & Noble, and other standard retailers. Please enjoy the next installment of Blood of the Stars by Corinne Norton.
Chapter 82. Garin was shoved aside as Silmar stepped forward, yanking Daisy and her mother apart.
"She's still branded to Mavis," Silmar said.
She doesn't always control me," Emerus said, her gaze still fixed on Daisy. "She has too many brands for that. I can feel the difference when she does. But you're right, she'll know you're here soon."
"Exactly what you'd say if she was controlling you," Silmar muttered.
He didn't waste time pulling out a knife and reaching for her palm. Without warning, her eyes glazed over and her fist drove into his neck, making him cough and sputter.
"I'm sorry."
She shook her head, her eyes widening with horror.
"I've tried cutting it out dozens of times over the years, but it's not possible. That's something she always has control over."
Silmar exchanged a glance with Jasperus before pulling out a vial.
"Let's try the other hand."
He sliced before she could argue, and everyone breathed a little easier when the blood dripped into the vial, sensing the plan might actually work. Garin shifted, exhaustion hitting him fresh now that they'd finally slowed down, and Emerus's gaze fell on him. She squinted.
"Garin? You've grown into a man."
She ignored Silmar as he healed her palm and stepped away.
"How in Rhistan did you get caught up in all this?"
Her use of his real name instead of Henry left him reeling, too distracted by his own questions to answer hers.
"You knew who I was?" he asked. "When I came for my dedication year?"
She shrugged.
"We suspected, and then we had it confirmed."
"Then why did you let me stay? Why did you let my parents bring Breck as a spy into your midst?"
Emerus sighed and glanced over Garin's shoulder. He followed her gaze to see Jasperus holding out his palm while Daisy argued with Silmar.
"We fed Breck several lies," she finally said. "First, to test him, then to weaken Mavis. But I kept your identity a secret, even from Iris, especially once I saw how attached you grew to Eliana. I was determined to protect you as much as her. Eventually Mavis caught on."
She gestured around the room, her hand trembling.
"Which is why it's all come to this."
Garin finally took in her odd mix of health and suffering. Soiled clothes and dirt under long nails hinted at days, if not weeks, without bathing, but his own battle sweat smelled too much to detect anything on her. Still, beneath the dirt she was well-fed, her eyes bright. In all these years, Mavis hadn't broken her, or maybe Mavis hadn't been willing to because she needed Emerus strong enough to use her. Behind them, Jasperus groaned. Emerus took up the same cry, each holding their hand in front of them as they dropped to their knees. Jasperus's forearm bubbled up black, making Garin wince. Emerus's palm did the same, her mark mirroring Jasperus's. He glanced at Daisy, who wrung her hands, eyes wide. He could practically see her calculating the amount of time she had left before the same mark started bubbling up on her hand. only it could be a brand from Mavis instead of Jasperus. She flinched as Lukai grabbed her hand and leaned in to whisper, stroking her hand with his own. Garen turned away.
"Are you all mad?"
Emerus croaked out, holding on to the wall as she tried to stand.
"I can sense her," Jasperus's voice came out pained. "It's so strong, like I'm having my awakening all over again."
Garen imagined the sensations he must be feeling, the rush of energy and its constant presence, a sense of insignificance in the midst of a newfound importance.
"You shouldn't have done that,"
Emerus whispered, her eyes unfocused.
"I can sense more than her, too. I can sense Mavis."
Jasperus stood, wild eyes darting around the room as though looking for the nearest exit.
"If I can sense her, she'll sense me soon. She'll know what we've done." "Command Emerus to cut out her old brand," Silmar said. "Quickly!"
Emerus stood, eyes narrowing at Jasperus. She rushed at him, bare feet slapping on stone, arms outstretched. Garen reached for her arm to hold her back, but she slipped to the side and his fingers only grazed her sleeve. Her hands were on Jasperus's neck before anyone could stop her, squeezing so hard Garen thought the old man's neck might snap.
Sun's fire. Mavis didn't waste any time.
Garen and Lukai each grabbed one of Emerus's arms, pulling her grip back enough to let Jasperus gasp in breaths.
"Cut out," he wheezed out the command. "Your old brand."
She hesitated, and Garen and Lukai took the opportunity to wrestle her to the floor, pinning her down as she thrashed against them. Silmar sat on her back, and Veldin kneeled by her face.
"I'm sorry,"
Veldin said as he pulled out a knife and worked at her palm. Her screams shifted from anger to pain, and blood pooled beneath her hand. Garen tried to imagine himself cutting a brand out of Daisy. It would be far better than killing her, but would it even be possible? It was taking 4 men to hold Emerus down, and that was with Jasperus already counteracting Mavis's brand. Daisy had been right to ask for her death, but he still didn't know if he could do it. He doubted he could even cut off her hand. Before long, Emerus's screams subsided, and Lukai wrapped his hands around her raw flesh. It felt like a waste to heal her now. They should be saving their magic for whatever was coming. But Daisy kneeled next to him, tears in her eyes as she thanked him. Emerus's gaze held fresh clarity, like she hadn't just been possessed to kill the people around her.
"I'm sorry,"
she said, over and over, even as Cyrus passed over Emerus's starlock and Daisy settled it around her mother's neck.
"I don't think Emerus can handle us cutting out Jasperus's brand, too," Silmar said. "Not tonight."
Jasperus nodded his understanding. It would have made him less of a target, but it didn't matter if he planned to brand Daisy anyway. Mavis would just have 2 reasons to brand him instead of 1. Silmar would have 2 reasons to kill him instead of 1. Garen didn't look toward Daisy, afraid his face would give away his doubt in his ability to follow through on his promise. Garen released Emerus's other arm, awkwardly standing by as she and Daisy hugged once more. Where was Mavis? And where was Daisy's blood? He peered out the broken wall, examining the fight below. Most of the people he saw were fallen, the fields surrounding the fortress oddly empty. Had Mavis's entire army chased the pirates and recreants into the woods? He squinted at the battlements, wondering if his eyes were tricking him. Was that Riverin? The man disappeared back inside the building, but Garen felt even more certain as he thought about the X he'd seen on the man's forehead. Except what was Riverin doing there? "Were all the soldiers and sailors supposed to retreat with the pirates?" he asked, turning to beckon Silmar. The old man joined him at the edge, and Garen pointed out the door where Riverin had disappeared. "I saw Riverin there. Is that where he should be?" Silmar frowned.
"No, none were supposed to remain."
Garen rushed to the other wall, leaning through one of the real windows. The sun had nearly hit the horizon. From this angle, he could also see the gatehouse, oddly empty. Even if they'd chased away most of the recreants, Mavis never would have approved of the zealots abandoning that post. He frowned, trying to piece together how all the soldiers could have made it to the fields and forests beyond that fast. Movement caught his eye as a line of black and red crossed a battlement. The soldiers headed right for Riverin and the northern keep Emerus had been trapped in. Garin's gaze snapped to Silmar, his sudden understanding reflected on the old man's slack face.
"We thought we were tricking them by leading them away from the castle, but we ended up setting a trap for ourselves. Whatever soldiers are left, they're coming here."
Silmar yanked on Emerus's collar, pulling her upright to stand beside him.
"Where is Mavis?"
Garin ran back to the hall and the spiral stairs they'd come from. The clink of metal could be distantly heard, the sound getting louder as soldiers grew closer.
"They're coming!" he called to Silmar, who swore.
"By now she's probably on the balcony attached to her rooms," Emerus said. "She knew you were coming, and she knew she'd need to brand Eliana early. But she'll hold off as close to the sun's sleep as she can to let her blood be at its peak state of energy. She'll want the brand to be as strong as possible."
She gave an apologetic look to Daisy.
"This way,"
Silmar said, leading them all out to the hall. Only a few doors remained this high up on the tower. Once the zealots reached their level, they'd be impossibly overrun.
"We need to block the passage," Garin said. "What about Aura and the others?" Daisy asked. "We could use their help."
Garin frowned. Riverin and more of his men might be down there too. They might already be dead. By blocking them off, he could be surrounding them with the enemy and sealing their graves.
"Garin's right," Silmar said. "Our priority is to keep Mavis from branding Eliana and to get both her and Emerus to safety. We can't do that with an army on our heels. Velden, take the others through the door to the west with the dragon crest on it. Those are Mavis's rooms. If she's not in there, Emerus is right. She'll be on the balcony."
Silmar held out a hand to Garin before planting his feet in the doorway to the stairs.
"I don't have that kind of power," Garin reminded him. "I deal in memories. I haven't developed my rim magic yet."
Silmar's brow rose.
"You have star blood like any other progeny. Give your power to me."
Garin eyed the doorway, then glanced at the others making their way down the hall. Silmar could have asked Velden or Lukai, even Daisy. She threw him a desperate glance. He nodded once, his heart doubling its speed as the relief spread on her face.
"I know your family isn't used to sharing things with others," Silmar said with a hint of dry irritation. "Especially those below their station, but I can't do this alone without killing myself. And as you said, you deal in memories. Your powers may not be needed tonight."
Garin narrowed his eyes but took Silmar's hand, letting his starlock burn as he sent his blood supply toward the other man. It stung for him to give up his power, but it stung worse knowing his power was seen as expendable. The stones in the archway rattled as if something in them had come to life, the noise competing with the rhythmic stomp of boots on stone. Garin peered down the steps, wondering if he would see torchlight at any moment or maybe the flash of weaponry or armor. The pull on his power faded, as if Silmar had hit a point of saturation. Garin loosened his grip, but Silmar squeezed tighter, heat forming between their hands. Two stones broke from the arch, flying to the floor with more force than simple gravity before smashing to pieces. Garin sensed another pull on his Starlock's power, shocked at how quickly Silmar might drain him. Silmar leaned heavily against the wall of the arch, his hand shaking where it braced against stones. The stones rattled louder, several more loosening and falling. Garin stepped back to avoid being hit, watching the rubble grow and fill the doorway as their energy drained. Silmar stepped back with him but traced the wall with his hand, loosening key stones as he went, and more stones showered down. Garin coughed as the dust rose, and he pulled Silmar back despite the older man's resistance.
"I think that's enough," Garin shouted over the din. "You're going to bring down the whole tower."
Silmar shook his head, but didn't waste the energy to reply. More stones flew, building a river of rock more than a wall against the incoming soldiers. Shouts grew over the sound of grinding stone, and through the gaps, Garin made out faces, one of them distinctly familiar with a black X.
"Riverin!"
Garin tried to shake off Silmar's hand, to cut off the flow of power, but his grip was inhuman, his focus unmatched. Riverin pawed at the stones, pushing a few out of his way to widen the opening that revealed his nose up to the ceiling. His hands clawed at more stones, but with Silmar's adjustments, they remained wedged, cutting Riverin off from the safety of the tower. Riverin's gaze rested on Garin's, his eyes pained.
"We have to help them!"
Garin shouted, forcing Silmar to release his hand.
"It's too late,"
Silmar said, his voice weak. He leaned his forehead against the wall, his lips dry and face pale above his beard. Riverin gave Garin a nod, then turned. Garin caught glimpse of a glint of steel before the final stones fell and cut them off completely. Silence echoed around them, choking Garin as much as the dust settling over their bodies. Garin fell to his knees, vaguely aware of his sudden weakness. They'd cut Riverin off along with the enemy, possibly burying them all alive. Their deaths could come at the hands of soldiers or even other sailors in the chaos. All because Garin had wanted to protect himself.
"Your actions have given the others a chance,"
Silmar rasped out, patting Garin's back, likely more for his own support to stand than to comfort Garin.
"We've given Eliana and Emerus a chance to stop Mavis. We've given all of Vendaris a chance at freedom."
His words stirred up the dying embers in Garin's chest. They hadn't lost everything yet. He'd made promises he needed to keep. A promise to himself to protect Daisy, and a promise to Daisy to kill her if need be. He stood on shaking legs, pulling Silmar up beside him, reaching for the staff the man had lost. They slowly made their way down the hall toward the others. It was time to break one of his promises, but he still wasn't sure which one.
Chapter 83. Beyond the battlement, Aura saw the northern keep, where it practically grew out of the mountain. She'd been present when this keep was first built, after the split of the family of Elenes. It had started as a refuge for Valen Elenes, but as her piety grew and the threat on her life lessened, it had turned into a sungazer. She and Willem Windren had settled down, content with their life as servants of the sun. Their descendants had chosen different paths, growing bitter over the throne they felt entitled to. Now the keep was a shadow of the great house of worship it had once been. The ceiling closed off, and the rooms filled with weaponry. Usually clouds covered these mountains, almost as if the sun wanted nothing to do with what the fortress had become. Aura closed her eyes to bask in the sun's rays, wondering if maybe its presence today was a sign that it approved of their plans, that it still might approve of her. Warmth filled her chest, spreading out toward her limbs. Kendallin nudged her side, breaking her concentration.
"We don't have time to rest. Up the stairs."
They crossed the battlement at a crouch. The door to the keep was already open,
which Aura took as a bad sign. Their group was aiming for stealth, so it had likely been left that way by zealot soldiers, unconcerned about giving away their location. They went in one by one, taking the steps two at a time. The moment Aura crossed the doorway, the entire tower rumbled. She gripped the stone frame, trying to find purchase.
"Are they bringing the whole thing down?"
Marnock's eyes widened as he looked back at Aura. "No." Aura traced her fingers over the stone, sensing Silmar's work. "They're blocking the top of the stairs. It's Silmar, not the soldiers."
"Why would they—"
Marnock cut off, his voice turning resigned.
"There are zealots between us, aren't there? Zealots in front of us and either zealots or Winnix behind."
Aura turned back, still able to see the door leading back to the larger fortress building across the battlement. As if they'd heard Marnock, the door across the battlement flew open, and a horde of Winnix poured out like fleas. Aura shut the Northern Keep's door behind her. "Seal it, Kendallin."
I'm a pneumatic. I can't do that kind of magic," Kendallin said.
"Then give your energy to Marnock so he can seal it."
"But that would drain both of us."
Aura pushed past the younger woman, not waiting to see if she obeyed. She kneeled down, placing a palm on the lowest step. Her mind traveled through the possibilities without her permission, seeking out all the ways they could overtake the soldiers above. All the ways people would die if they didn't. Every way she looked ended in failure. Every way without her interference ended in death. Even if she did something, she wasn't sure it would change things. The end result still might not include the golden arrow. But this time, it was like the sun itself urged her on with a whisper of hope. Her throat grew tight with the familiarity of it. It had been so long since she'd felt not just the sun's presence or possible approval, but its guidance. The overwhelming presence of it both stung and reassured her. No matter what happened in life or death, the sun would not abandon her. She brought the braid to her lips and kissed it. "I'm sorry. I promise I'll try again." Then she placed both palms on the step and reached out, searching for the smallest of seeds. Her mind drove through the cracks of the steps, the mud holding stone upon stone, until she found a tiny sapling, more like a weed sprouting in the dank corner of the fourth stair up, grown by water that dripped when it rained and by the sun's morning light. She fed her energy to the sapling until it grew and twisted, its vines wrapping along the steps and up the wall. Holm gasped and jumped back, but Marnock made his way up the steps, careful to avoid stepping on her creation.
"Earth," Kendallin breathed from behind her. "You control Earth. You have rim magic. But you have no Starlock. You really must be a star."
Aura ignored the younger woman, instead focusing on the vine as it thickened and stretched, winding its way up the stairs before splitting in a dozen directions, climbing the walls until it covered the stairs above and below, continuing to creep up to the enemy above.
The vine was blind to the soldiers it would encounter. But Aura could sense them. Thorns grew from each of the vine's tips, thrashing out like claws on a whip. The first soldier's scream made them all jump as it echoed down the stairwell. Aura closed her eyes and leaned into that first step, letting her forehead rest on the stone of the second. Her power leaked from every pore, congealing at her palms before finding a home in the vine that still grew and lashed out at soldiers. As the vine spread farther, it wrapped around ankles and wrists and necks, yanking them off balance or squeezing air from their lungs. The crack of bones and skulls on stone mixed with panicked shouts and horrified screams. Something warm and wet dripped down the center of the stairwell, plinking against Aura's hands. The cramped stairwell left the soldiers trapped, unable to pass the vines and dead soldiers blocking their escape down. Still, they tried, trampling each other in their fear, putting themselves in the path of Aura's deadly vine. She kept it growing out and up, overlapping itself until it was thick enough to entangle men and bury bodies, all the way to the stairs' end. And something else. Something good. Aura stretched and reached, her hands beginning to tremble, her breaths coming in short gasps. Another power met her own at the top of the stairs. She halted the vine, holding it steady, pausing as if to sniff out the other source. Only remnants of magic remained, but her power was too weak to trace its signature. And three souls remained at the top. Three people not yet tainted by Mavis's magic and influence. She let her vine pass over them before turning back around, crawling through the bodies sprawled across the steps, slicing through any that still held life. At this point, it was a mercy, silencing the moans and cries of a battlefield. When the last of them faded, Aura collapsed across the steps, her eyes open but not seen. Only stars danced before her vision, and for a moment, she smiled as they darted to and fro. "My friends," she murmured. But then the vision cleared, and Kendallin's face swam before her, at least three different versions of it. "Aura?" The word reverberated in her head, like when they'd sat in the canyon, and Aura closed her eyes against the pain in her temple. "Leave me," she said. I'm not sure our lock will hold." Kendallin's voice grew more frantic, which only hurt Aura's ears more. "It's not something either of us have done before." "I'll take her," Holm said. Hands gripped Aura, and she sensed the change in gravity, like taking flight. Then, she sensed nothing more.
I hope you enjoyed listening to this first installment of Blood of the Stars by Corinne Norton. To get reminders for new episodes and to stay up to date with my books, be sure to sign up for my newsletter at corinnenorton.com. You'll also get the prequel short story to Blood of the Stars in ebook and audio for free. Thanks so much for listening.